This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
We discuss the DC shooter in just a moment on The Patriot Preacher. Good morning, everybody, and welcome to The Patriot Preacher, covering the news from a Christian perspective. Welcome to the program. I'm Caleb Colquitt, your humble host as always. Glad to be with you on a Friday. The weekend is upon us, so we do have some serious business to talk about. We're going to try to have a little fun in this show, but I do want to address something of a more somber nature to start out with. We do have a couple updates on the situation with the DC shooter who, of course, attacked several senators and congressmen that were practicing for a charity ball game at the baseball field with six injured, including the shooter himself, who is now deceased. Congressman Scalise will require more operations, according to the press releases. He is, as far as we know, still in critical condition. You remember, originally, it looked like he was going to be fine, it wasn't going to be a big deal, that he was going to be all right, and then we found out that it appears as though his condition worsened by a great deal. So he took a turn for the worst. However, in the past day, he has improved. His doctor said, though he is still in critical condition, he's gotten much better. It would be incorrect to say that he's out of the woods yet, but they're still expecting him to make a full recovery. The truth is, based on this condition, had it not been for a couple of the Republican senators and congressmen there, that he probably would have died. It was just happenstance that the Majority Whip, Steve Scalise, happened to be very near one of the representatives from Ohio, whose name escapes me at the moment, but who happened to be a doctor. So that was just incredibly fortunate for him. And this isn't a guy that makes a lot of waves in Congress, so unfortunately I don't recall his name right off the top of my head. I mentioned it on the air the other day, but I don't have it in front of me. And then, of course, Mo Brooks and Jeff Flake, who were there. Jeff Flake apparently took off his belt, and Mo Brooks was able to use it as a tourniquet. So they were there assisting with that, applying pressure to the wound, according to the doctor's recommendation, and they were able to keep him alive until authorities arrived on the scene that could help him out. So Steve Scalise definitely still needs your prayers, but he has improved over the last 24 hours, and that's certainly good. Also, I wanted to give this update. The game was played last night. The game that they were practicing for, that was actually the last practice before their game started, and they were able to raise over $1 million for the charities that they do it for, particularly the Girls in Boys Town. So lots of money raised for this in particular. I mean, obviously we would rather this attack have not happened, but the fact that it did happen upped the donations considerably, and because of this, it appears as though a lot of money is going to go to a lot of good with the Boys and Girls Town of America, that charity organization that helps kids, especially in impoverished neighborhoods. So that's really good that they were able to do that, and they played it as scheduled in Steve Scalise's honor. This was a really cool little tidbit that I pulled up from the news. Typically, the way that it works is that you have your team's jersey. So if you're on the Republican side, you have a shirt that says Republican, same for the Democrats. However, there is no hat. And the reason there's no hat to the uniform is because everybody wears the baseball cap of their favorite baseball team. That can be college, that can be minor league, that can be major league, but you get to wear your favorite team's hat. So, for example, if I were a Republican congressman, heaven help us if that ever happens, I would be wearing an Atlanta Braves hat. Well, last night, that did not happen. And here's why. Every player, both Democrat and Republican, wore an LSU hat in honor of Steve Scalise. So we love to see that they were doing that in his honor to, remember that he's heard, and that they were doing that just as in a quite literal sense, a hat tip to him. So it's really nice to see that they were able to do that for Steve Scalise, and I'm sure that his family was appreciative of it. And I do think that it showed a great deal of strength that they were able to get on the field and play as regularly scheduled. So let's remember to continue to pray for Steve Scalise, but let's also continue to pray for those affected. Because Steve Scalise, of course, is the one that's hurt the most, and he's the highest profile one because he's the majority whip. But keep in mind that his aide was also injured, and so were the officers involved. So we really want to the best of our ability, remember what has happened with them and keep them in our prayers. So here's the deal. I wanted to do the best that I could to stay out of the politics surrounding this, at least for the first 48 hours. And the reason that I did that, and I gave my reasonings just the other day, is I think that it's appropriate. I think that it's appropriate to stay away from the politics when a tragedy like this happens just for a few minutes. There's a couple reasons I think that's a good idea. First of all, it takes a little bit of the emotional sting out of it. Because people who make decisions in anger, people who make decisions and make comments when emotions are really high, typically, they tend to make mistakes. And so, that being said, I think that it's wise to hold off on making comments until at least 48 hours after the event takes place when you're talking about political, prognostication. Talking about the facts of what happened, perfectly acceptable. We did that here on Wednesday when this happened. Talking about not only the events surrounding it, but some of the lead up to it, perfectly acceptable. The facts of the case, I think, are fair game as soon as it happens. But I wanted to wait to talk about any of the politics surrounding it for that reason. It takes a little bit of the emotional sting out of it. And I think that this is more important, usually when people comment on the politics of a tragedy like this, it seems as though they're almost in a rush to be wrong. And so there's details that they throw out there, and it turns out to be not right, including the shooting of Gabby Giffords, which is the closest event that we have to this, and I'll get into some of the details of that in a moment. But the point is, if you wait just a little bit, you have more details to go on, you're less likely to say something that's inaccurate or sticks in someone's mind, even though it's not true. And so both that and the fact that you're taking some of the emotion out of it, you're able to comment at least slightly more objectively than you would have 2 days beforehand, is the reason that I typically, my rule of thumb is to wait for 48 hours. So that being said, we are going to get into the politics of it, and it looks like I'm not the only one because we've got some callers on the board, even though it's just my opening monologue. We'll get to those in just a minute. We'll be back.
For this soon shall pass like the high.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The Bible is a book worth more than all the other books that were ever printed. Patrick Henry.
Welcome back. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in. Joe was just telling me that he saw part of the game last night. What was your assessment of it, Joe?
Well, first of all, from a purely looking at it as a sportscaster or a sports fan,
right,
the quality of play was amazingly good. I'm not saying it was up to pro standards.
Well, I mean, it's amateur league.
It was a lot easier to play a softball game on a small field. You know how big a regular diamond is. That's all those guys. And then you could just tell by the way they swung the bat, threw the ball. You could tell they'd had experience. So it wasn't perfect, but it was good. And I noticed, and I was telling you too, I never had watched one of those. Don't know if they'd ever been televised, but I was so maybe every year it's like this. But the camaraderie, the friendship that these guys, it was evident that they respected each other. But they took the game. It was I didn't know. I thought it might be one of these like celebrity softball games where everybody's just not really trying and whatever. But they were very intense. They ran the bases hard. There was even a collision at third. I forget who it was. But bottom line, and the crowd was absolutely into the game. The entire bottom deck of National Stadium was packed, and they were trying to let people in. So they could have had even more than probably the 20,000-25,000 that they had. And after all of the opening ceremonies and after everything else, it went on. No, they were appropriately respectful to begin with, and then it became a baseball game.
Yeah, I've actually heard that the game, and this is why they probably take it seriously, I've heard from a couple of the congressmen that they've interviewed that this is a source of some trash talk and some bragging rights throughout the next year. So that's probably why they take it seriously.
So they took it seriously, Democrats, 11-2, they won. So the Republicans now trail in the series. I didn't know this going in. The series was all tied at 39-39 over the years that they played. I think one tie.
I'm surprised the Democrats are willing to play a game where they kept score. That's surprising. Maybe it's only when they're winning that they're okay with that.
But
I'm not sure.
I know we have some calls waiting.
Yeah,
but
we are about to jump to the calls.
But it was really appropriate that they did it. I am so happy, and especially in retrospect, that they played. Everybody enjoyed themselves. And
excellent. Let's go ahead and go to the phones, though, because we are running up against a hard break.
We asked for calls.
Right. Let's go to Curtis. Curtis.
Hey, good morning, gentlemen.
How you doing, my man?
Hey, what do you think in terms of the media response and the attention that it's gotten throughout the country? If it had been a Tea Party or right-wing guy who had shot, let's just say, a Democrat under the same circumstances, so to speak,
right?
Do you think you would have a equivalent response in terms from the media, or do you think it would be far more vitriolic and obstreperous and all the rest?
Well, here's the thing, Curtis. Normally, when I would say something like this, I would give you what my best guess is, but I don't have to do that this time because I actually know. If you'll remember, about 6 years ago, Congressman Gabby Giffords, was shot, and it was a Democrat, so people assumed it was some kind of Tea Party person. This was right around the time the Tea Party really got some legs under it and got started. And so even though we found out later that that was completely untrue, when we looked at that, initially people were assuming it was the Tea Party, and the media had a mental breakdown, blaming the rhetoric of the Tea Party, saying that this was all them, that it had to do with specifically several people in the media blamed talk radio, blamed Sarah Palin specifically for putting out an email where she was talking about targeting Gabby Giffords' district to try to replace her with a Tea Party candidate, and she had a crosshair over all the districts that she was targeting, which included that one. Pretty common practice back then, not really done anymore because of that specifically. And then they found out later that the guy actually had been obsessed with Gabby Giffords for about 3 years before that. So before the Tea Party even started, he was obsessed with her, and he was actually a registered Democrat. So it turns out that even though that was false, we got to at least the good thing that came out of that is we got to see a little window into how the Democrats would have reacted had it been a Tea Party person, and that's what we saw.
Right. Yeah, so it just does affirm, I think, in most people's minds that the media bias would just be over the top if it was a reverse situation. You would just see the outrage and the talk shows and on, just it would be incessant.
Yeah, I think that's...
Yeah, there's sympathy towards, obviously, what happened and all the rest, of course, but
right.
It would just be so much more politicized.
And to your point, and thank you for your call, Curtis, I appreciate that. To your point, there was some sympathy, of course, for Gabby Giffords and an outpouring of it. In fact, that was one of the very few speeches that Obama gave that I didn't take issue with in any shape or form. He didn't use it for political gamesmanship. He didn't talk about gun control. He didn't really accuse anybody for the shooting except for the shooter himself, which is exactly what I think the president should have done. And so that was one of the very few times that President Obama spoke, and I didn't take issue with a single word that he said. So that sympathy did exist, and there were a couple of good things that did come out of it, but by and large, the media backlash was just incredibly vitriolic and finger-pointing, blaming other people, blaming society, blaming the NRA. Just there was no shortage of people that the left wanted to blame when they thought, it turns out they were wrong, but they thought that it was somebody on the right attacking a Democrat senator. Let's go to Small Claims. Small, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here. You hung up on me on the first time, but I know you don't. You can't deal with electronic products, I guess, but how you doing today?
I'm doing good. What's on your mind today, Small?
Well, can I give a comment that's off the subject? I got one on the subject.
Why don't you give the one on the subject first, because we're running out of time.
Well, okay, on the subject is this sniper, D.C. sniper.
Right.
You remember Sandy Hook.
Right.
Okay, so you got millions of people claim that never happened.
Well, I don't know about millions, but there's certainly a group of people that claim that Sandy Hook was staged.
Well, I'm wondering if they're going to do the same thing with this issue.
Well, Alex Jones is one media personality that's really famous for saying that Sandy Hook was all staged. And since he never met a conspiracy theory he didn't like, I would imagine Alex Jones and his ilk will probably claim that this was all an inside job, too.
Well, hey, let me ask you two more quick things. Like, let's say tomorrow,
right,
that there wasn't one Republican on this earth, not one. What would happen? Nothing.
Not sure where you're going with that, but all right.
Here's the last one. This guy, he was shooting, and this going on. Who is the enemy?
Who is the enemy?
You say you're a preacher. Who is this enemy? Who's the enemy?
I'm not understanding what you're asking me for.
Well, there's got to be an enemy.
Well, I would guess the enemy is the shooter, James Hodgkinson.
Oh, he's the enemy. Okay.
Yeah, he's the bad guy. I mean, I don't know how else to put that. Thank you for your calls, Small Claims. Little off subject there, but, you know, nonetheless. Not sure what he was asking about, but we do have a break coming up here in just a second. We're up against a hard break, so I'm sorry to any callers I wasn't able to get to, but I only have a few seconds here, and the radio's going to cut me off. So we'll get back more of your comments, and then I'm going to give my reaction in just a second when we come back.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 3:20. For our citizenship is in heaven, from which also we eagerly wait for a Savior, the Lord Jesus Christ.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Now, you're about to hear my reaction to all of this, my reaction to the shooting, because I have put together a comprehensive list of all the people that are to blame for this shooting.
Mm.
All the people that could have prevented it, all the people that are to blame for the people that are injured. I put together a list. And here it goes.
Okay.
James Hodgkinson, the shooter. No, that's it.
Yeah.
That's the only one that you can blame for it.
I totally agree. Almost sounds like a disease.
Hodgkinson?
Anyway. Yeah.
I've never met a Hodgkinson, come to think of it.
Or maybe what kind of rifle did he use?
I don't know if those details have been out yet. I have read through CNN, CBS. Nobody has been able to say it was some kind of rifle,
so you don't,
but that's all we know.
You don't guess the rifle had anything to do with
it? No, rifle had nothing to do with it. The rifle maker had nothing to do with it. The NRA didn't have anything to do with it. The bullets that he put in, whatever company made those, had nothing to do with it. The guy who invented gunpowder back in the Middle Ages had nothing to do with it.
I think the Chinese did.
Right, it was the Chinese, but I believe that was in the Dark Ages, if I'm not mistaken. But anyway.
That's a shame. We can't blame anybody but the shooter.
Nope, just the shooter. He's the one that put the bullets into the rifle, fired off the rounds. He's the one that decided to wake up that morning in his van, because that's where he lived, and that's really a part of the story, and decided to fire on innocent people. He and he alone is the only person to blame for it. That being said, I am going to get into some of the politics of this. But throughout everything that I say, I am reporting part of the story, but keep in mind that he is the only person that any reasonable person will blame for the shooting. So what have we learned about Hodgkinson since then? First of all, we know that he was a avid Bernie supporter to the point where he was actually a staffer and volunteer on Bernie Sanders' presidential campaign. Very involved in the campaign, volunteered for it. They had a conversation with one of the people that went out actually surveying neighborhoods, getting out there, trying to drum up votes for Bernie Sanders in the primaries. So guy was a huge Bernie Sanders fan, big supporter, incredibly progressive, hardcore progressive is the way he was described by some of the people that knew him. He also attended the climate march. Y'all may remember the climate march that happened, I don't know, what was that, about 2 months ago in D.C. He was there. He was one of the activists that was marching on Washington to try to drum up support for global warming, climate change, whatever new name they're going to come up with next. So he was out there at the climate march, actually marching for that with all the progressives with him. He was also vocally and the best way to say it is vitriolically, because I can't repeat some of the tweets because this is a family show. So I can't actually repeat some of the things that he was saying about the president. So despised Trump, couldn't stand the guy, referred to him as Hitler once, actually referred to him as Hitler multiple times, but used all kinds of unsavory language that cannot be repeated in polite company, talking about the president. Pretty vitriolic, blamed him for, equated him to one of the greatest mass murderers in history. So not a fan of the president, to say the least. Also, he called upon any who oppose a raise in minimum wage as people who were encouraging slavery, saying that they were making people work for slave wages. When it came to the election, he blamed the Koch brothers and the rich for stealing the election. So this guy apparently believed that somehow if you're rich enough, you can buy off elections. And the reason Donald Trump got elected is not because people voted for him, but because somehow the Koch brothers rigged it to where Donald Trump won the election, which is interesting because if I'm recalling correctly, the Koch brothers didn't even support Trump in the primary. I imagine they probably gave money to his campaign after he was the candidate, but if the Koch brothers were all that powerful, why is it they weren't able to get their guy through the primaries? But regardless, the interesting part to me and the thing that was most telling about what may have led to this, what in his personality may have led him down this dark path, is that he was apparently either an atheist or at the very least really didn't like people who do believe in God. There were several posts where he was talking about how stupid it is to believe in God, how he's tired of people talking about God, so on and so forth. So I don't know that he was actually an atheist, but he was certainly someone who, at the very least, didn't like people who believe in God. Maybe he was an agnostic. Really don't know. But we do know that from his social media feed, some of the things that he posted and put out there, which was interesting because going along with looking through all this stuff that was found on his social media, if I'm not mistaken, both his profile picture on his Facebook page and his Twitter feed are both a picture of Uncle Sam, but instead of Uncle Sam's face, that's edited out and photoshopped over it as Bernie Sanders' face. So this dude, huge Bernie Sanders fan, he bore every single stereotypical brand of a progressive Democrat activist. In fact, we had a question asked by Curtis, which was a good question. We were asked about how the media would have reacted if they had somebody in the Tea Party that had done something like this. Well, the thing is, they tried to make that happen because over and over and over and over again, the early reports of shootings were that such and such was a Tea Party person. Such and such did this for political reasons. We remember the Gappy Giffords thing, which I just talked about, where even though they had no reason to believe that the guy was a conservative other than the fact that his victim was a Democrat congressman, they just claimed that the guy had been stirred up by talk radio and the Tea Party. Came to find out, not only did he not listen to talk radio, nor was he a member of the Tea Party, but he was also a Democrat. So, and he had been obsessed with Gabby Gifford since before the Tea Party ever even started. So the idea that that was the cause of it has been thoroughly debunked for 6 years. And yet yesterday, I'm watching the news, and I see the Washington Post and CNN cite that as though it were still the case. That story was disproven 6 years ago. There was no truth to it being the fault of or his actions drummed up by the quote-unquote rhetoric of the right. This was absolutely everything the media could have hoped for if it had been on the other side. Can you imagine if this had happened to somebody who volunteered for one of the, let's say, Rand Paul, Ted Cruz, especially one of the more conservative guys in the primary? You know, he didn't stay in as long, but maybe somebody like Bobby Jindal or Marco Rubio. And then he had volunteered for those people. There was a trail on his social media page of being uber to the right, and then had come out and also not only had volunteered for those campaigns, but let's say he had Tea Party stuff all over his social media. He was talking about how evil President Obama was, how evil Hillary Clinton was. This was absolutely everything the media wanted in somebody on the other side, and they never found it. You remember with the Aurora shooting, Aurora, Colorado, they tried to even pin that on the Tea Party because the guy had the same name as another guy in the same state who was a Tea Party activist, but the guys didn't even live near each other.
Really, what difference does it, and I know what you're saying in a way, but what difference does it make? It's not Republican or Democrat or Tea Party. It's just an evil person.
Right, and that's...
It's an evil person to do something. You can't say all Democrats, all Republicans, all Tea Party.
No, and I said that and on the beginning. You can't blame Democrats, Republicans, whoever it may be.
I mean, it just so happens that this guy was a Sanders supporter, but you know good and well Sanders, that has nothing to do with anything. He's just...
Well, if that's the case, there would be an awful lot of people going out killing people right now because a lot of people volunteered for Bernie Sanders.
That's my point. He's a nutcase.
And so that being said, though, I'm hoping that with all of this, with everything that we just laid out and the way that the media and the left tried to pin this on the Tea Party, even when they weren't connected to it, that now that we actually have exactly what they were trying to do on the right, except on the left, we've got to keep that in mind because I wanted to bring this up as well. When Gabby Giffords was shot, back before they knew who the guy was and believed him to be some activist on the right who was a member of the Tea Party, Bernie Sanders actually fundraised off of that, sent out fundraising letters to get donations saying that he needed help in his campaign to support Democrat causes to combat the hateful rhetoric of the right, which caused Gabby Giffords to be shot. That was a letter that Bernie Sanders himself actually put out. And he said in this letter that it comes as no surprise that this happened with the way that the right talks. So he absolutely blamed the right for Gabrielle Giffords' shooting.
Well, he's absolutely wrong. Well,
I agree. He also said that it was not an aberration for the right, and this is something that should be expected considering the way that the right talks. In other words, this was the natural cause of the right's rhetoric. And we found out later, of course, that the shooter was not who we said he was, but he never retracted that statement. Now, yesterday, Bernie Sanders comes out and condemns the shooter. I think he's sincere, and I want to give him the benefit of the doubt. All I'm saying is I'm hoping that Bernie Sanders will take a step back, do a little self-reflection, and say, you know what, that wasn't right what I did back then. And I'm not saying that I'm glad that this happened to him. I was not wishing for the shooter to be of any political affiliation. Obviously, that was his motivation because he didn't like Republicans, did like Democrats, and so he attacked Republicans. But my point in all this is, it's not Bernie Sanders' fault, but since that did happen, I'm hoping that Bernie Sanders and the left will do a little self-reflection So far, I haven't seen a lot of it. In fact, there were several people in the media yesterday somehow blaming Donald Trump for this. And I couldn't... Apparently, if a Democrat or a Republican get shot, it's still the Republican's fault either way. But my point in all of this is we do need to do a little self-reflection on both sides. Because here's the thing. If the right does this to the left from here on out, how are we any better than them? We're going to talk about that in just a second when we come back. Never had a plan, just a living for the minute.
Yeah, went down yonder on the Chattahoochee, you never. This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
You do well to wish to learn our arts and ways of life, and above all, the religion of Jesus Christ. These will make you a greater and happier people than you are. George Washington.
Welcome back, everybody. You're listening to The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com. Father's Day is coming up, so if your dad were to, say, win $4,000, that would be a pretty good Father's Day. Well, you can do that if you want to upgrade his favorite spot at home, whether it's buying a big TV for that man cave or his den, buying a big grill, upgrading his lawn care equipment, buying some new tools, whatever it is, doesn't matter. You get $4,000 to treat your dad to the best Father's Day ever. If you go to the Top Pop contest, you can enter that today at NewsRadio1440.com. Show your dad you care and make sure that you enter that soon because, of course, Father's Day being the Sunday, we are winding down on our deadline for that. Also, don't forget we've got the Montgomery Biscuits grand opening. Speaking of things to take your dad to, we've got baseball, lots of fun. You can see the human cannonball on Thursday. Deontay Wilder's going to be there on Friday with fireworks. Right.
You heard about, well, I don't know. Well, you heard about his little run-in with the law?
Oh, no, I didn't.
Yeah, he was arrested for it. I don't know if this is appropriate during the promo, but it is what it is. He was arrested in Birmingham because he had possession of, like, some marijuana in his car.
Okay, well, we'll see then.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the block party on Saturday and Superheroes Night on Sunday to make up for the last Superheroes Night that got rained out. So be sure to check all of those out. Did want to get back to the subject at hand, though. With what was going on with the shooting in D.C., I will say that, and keep in mind, I said at the opening of this, James Hodgkinson is the first and the last name on the list of people you should blame for this shooting. That being said, I do want to bring this up. The left has a real issue with the way they talk about conservatives. And before I go any further, I know there's going to be people upset at me. They're going to say, well, the right has... I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that the right doesn't have issues with their rhetoric as well. What I'm saying is, let's focus on the left here for a second because that's the matter at hand. I've talked quite a bit about some of the problems on the right, but that's not the subject matter for today. The left does have a real issue with the way that they talk about conservatives. For example, when they talk about conservatives being against a federal minimum wage, for whatever reason, they talk about them being enslaving people. They say that it's actual slavery, the way that they oppose minimum wages. This is some of the stuff that the shooter was saying himself. They're saying that they're oppressing women, they're keeping us back in the dark ages, they want things to go back to the early 1800s when slavery was in style, that we oppress minorities, that we oppress immigrants, and that we're just as bad as, you know, monarchies would have been back at that time. They also say that we're literally causing the apocalypse with global warming. So, and I've heard this on many, many occasions, that conservatives are going to be the ones that destroy the world because they oppose things like CO2 emission control, that kind of thing. And when it comes to things like Obamacare, opposing Obamacare, even though we didn't have Obamacare just 7 short years ago, that the second Obamacare goes away, millions of children will die. There will be bodies piled up in the streets outside of hospitals because they can't get care. So the way that they describe the things that they're talking about with the fiery language, the way they talk about conservatives, that is dangerous because you're painting a picture. It's not about ideas. They make it about people. it's painting a picture that these guys are bad guys, and that if you believe that they're literally killing children with denying them health care, that they're causing the end of the planet, you can see how somebody that's already a little unhinged, and this guy definitely was, his stepdaughter apparently was so eager to get away from him, she literally poured gasoline on herself and set herself on fire. So this is already an unhinged dude.
Oh, he had a huge history of being unhinged.
Oh, yeah.
Dating back 7 or 8 more years. I had, you know, archival footage of him on the news making a fool of himself.
Oh, yeah. This guy was definitely a nut. But my point in all of that is, when it comes to this guy, you feed that stuff into somebody that's already there, and you can't control where your words go and who it affects. I understand that, being someone who does quite a bit of talking himself. But my point in all of that is, when someone that's already a little crazy hears something like that, that there are people that are literally destroying the planet, literally enslaving people, literally oppressing people, and that's the way that you paint that picture, and that's how he sees it in his head, you can see how somebody like that may be a little more inclined to strike out in violence against some of the people he believes are to blame. And I also want to put this up there. This week, not 7 days ago, we had the story of the New York players doing the Shakespeare in the Park, depicting a brutal assassination of Donald Trump. 2 weeks ago, we had a leftist comedian, Kathy Griffin, holding a fairly realistic-looking decapitated head of the president. Does that make it the actors in the Julius Caesar play's fault? No. Does it make it Kathy Griffin's fault? No. However, had that happened, something to that effect happened, a bloody President Obama head being held up by, I don't know, Ted Nugent or somebody like that, who is kind of notoriously on the right, or it had been a brutal depiction of President Barack Obama being assassinated just 2 weeks before the Gabby Gifford shooting, the left would have lost their minds, claiming that that kind of thing was the reason that this shooting happened, and yet we're hearing crickets from them now on this. Now, I'm not saying they should blame them. Quite the contrary. I'm just saying the inconsistency is obvious. And so this is a characterization of how the left's rhetoric can get too heated. And I really do think that everything that we've been saying so far goes back to exactly two things. See, conservatives have something to fall back on. Conservatives have the unalienable rights of man and God. That's not to say that there aren't people on the left that don't have those things, that don't believe in those things, because there's quite a few of them that do. But unfortunately, there's been an animosity towards those things by the left over the past few years. You remember right around the time President Obama got elected, the Democrat Party had a groundswell movement to remove any mentions of God out of their official platform. And furthermore, the rights have become more subjective, according to the left. Well, we can protect speech, but not speech that we don't like. We can protect guns, but we need to restrict them as much as possible. And I won't go through all 10 of the First Amendments, but my point in all of that is, if you don't have God and inalienable rights to anchor yourself to, you wind up getting lost, and I think that's what happened. Hour 2 coming next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
What's up, preacher man?
We continue our discussion of the DC shooting and talk about what reaction should we have. All that on The Patriot Preacher. Welcome back, everybody. Hour 2 of The Patriot Preacher is on now. Glad to be back with you this morning on a Friday. Weekend is coming up, so did want to address this before the weekend came and it started to fade from our collective attention. By the way, 860-1440, if you do want to comment, and we will be taking calls in the second segment of this hour. So before we do get to that, though, I think we need to talk about the philosophy. We need to talk about the ideas. Because the reason that I think the left, because traditionally, not every time, but traditionally, the political violence, assassination attempts of people, normally that comes from the radical left. And so what is the problem? Why is it seem that that's more prevalent on the radical left? And historically, that has been the case. So let's ask ourselves, what's causing that? Why is it that that ideology seems to lend itself more to violence? Well, I really think that it goes back to what I ended the last hour with. They don't have something to anchor themselves because they have rejected the idea of sovereignty of God, and they've rejected the idea of unalienable rights. In their mind, you have unalienable rights until those rights get inconvenient, and then they can be taken away. So that being said, without those ideas, because keep in mind, the right to life is the first right. And because generally constitutional conservatives anchor themselves to that as their core idea, we don't tend to take another person's life because it's inconsistent with our ideology. Now, the average person, right or left, regardless of their political or even religious affiliation, believes that as well. But that doesn't necessarily mean that that's what their political ideology is built upon. See, to many on the left, politics and the government is their religion. And that's a problem. Whenever you start worshiping something that's a false idol, you lose your true north. Now, granted, there are people that get overly involved in politics on the right, but those true conservatives that anchor themselves to the Constitution as their ultimate God, granted, religiously, still not a good idea, because the Constitution, as great as it is a flawed document written by mortal men. So it's not the word of God, it's not what we should be anchoring ourselves to, and it's not going to save you. But at least when that happens, what they've anchored themselves to clearly and explicitly states, you don't take another person's life. You don't engage in violence against another person because you don't like their speech, because that's what the core of their belief system says. So, that being said, you can see how the left and the way that they have essentially put this ideology together, how the logical conclusion to such an ideology could justify violence. Now, without rights or God to restrain that action, violence can be viewed as an acceptable answer, especially if you believe that Republicans are killing children by denying them health care or denying them food without the school lunch programs or literally causing the end of the world with driving a Hummer and that being what causes the end of the earth. You see, like Islam, I believe progressivism to be a very flawed ideology that leads to violence. However, like the Muslim community, most liberals are good, nonviolent people. So why is that the case if that's the ideology? If the ideology is a problem, then why is it that the vast majority of those people are nonviolent and don't want to hurt folks? Well, I contend because they are nonviolent in spite of that ideology, that the average Muslim and the average progressive knows instinctively in their heart, because of the conscience that the Lord gave them, that that's not right. And so because of that, I believe that even though the vast majority of those people are good folks that aren't really out to hurt anybody, that's actually in spite of their ideology. They're not following their ideology to its logical conclusion because they know that it's wrong, because they know that that's not okay to do. And so that's why they don't take it to that extreme. But that's also why there are a few people that don't have those quote-unquote hang-ups, that don't have that base of God and unalienable rights to anchor themselves to, and that's why they go off the rails. So where do we go from here knowing all that? This is what I'm asking everybody in my audience to do, and that I would ask everybody who may not even necessarily be a fan of mine to do. This is what I would like to see. For those of us on the right that are seeing the left go after us, and we know for a fact that the left would not give us this much leeway if the tables were turned, because we remember what it was like when they thought the tables were turned with Gabby Giffords. Let's be the people that we wanted the left to be when they thought it was us. That's what I'm asking. Revenge feels good, but that doesn't make it okay. You see, as conservatives, we believe in the individual, and we don't blame society, and we don't blame inanimate objects, and we don't blame rhetoric or whatever else it may be for a person's decision. We believe that the individual makes his own choices, and since we do believe that, let's blame the shooter, not anybody else. Let's not blame Bernie Sanders. Let's not blame Kathy Griffin or the people doing the Julius Caesar play, even though that's not right. And even though maybe that did contribute to this person thinking some of the things that he did, it was still his decision. He still pulled the trigger. He loaded the gun. He woke up that morning. Apparently, this guy was scoping out, as we found out recently, the ballpark for a couple weeks before actually deciding to go through with it and attack. So this was blatantly premeditated. It was on him. It's his fault, nobody else's. And here's the thing. If we do have that belief in God, God's going to take vengeance anyway. If there's people on the left that are saying things that are maybe leading people to this, and they're doing it because they're not being honest with each other, God's going to take care of that anyway. Let's not strike out against them. That doesn't mean you don't give up. That doesn't mean you don't call out wrong when you see it. But Hodgkinson is the only person to blame for this happening. I get that it's not fair. I get that if the tables were reversed, they would not give us the benefit of the doubt. But that's what it means to turn the other cheek. James Hodgkinson is the only person responsible for this period, this shooting, period. End of discussion. Draw the curtains. That's it. We'll be back. Life is not tried,
it is merely surviving. This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Colossians 3:17. Whatever you do in word or deed, do all in the name of the Lord Jesus, giving thanks through him to God the Father.
Welcome back, people. You're listening to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and newsradio1440.com. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to get in touch with me. We do have a caller on the line, and we're going to go to him in just a second. Before
Yes, we do.
We do have two open slots, though, so if you want to get in, now is the time to call, 860-1440. In the meantime, I wanted to mention a couple of our sponsors. We've got this real quick. Think, shop, and buy local. Think about our local economy, shop at our local businesses, and buy from our local companies who give back to the community. Cumulus Media supports the River Region local businesses, including El Rancho Grande, Century Financial, and Shane's Ribs Shack. So whatever your needs, large to small, think, shop, and buy local. Also, our good friends at Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center. I was over there just the other day, needed an oil change, and the thing is, obviously some things take longer than others, but any time that they have Clyde, my old truck, for a little while, they always do a great job, never need to take a second look at anything, and they get him back on the road as quickly as humanly possible. You go in for something like an oil change, you're going to be out of there pretty quick. I was over there, there was quite a line, and they still got me out of there in time to get back to what I needed to do. So check out my good friends at Jim Woodham Southside Firestone Tire and Auto Center on the Troy Highway in the south side of Montgomery. They've been in Montgomery for 50 years, and there's a very good reason for that. They're good at what they do. Let's go to the phones. John from Millbrook on line one. Good morning.
Good morning. Yeah, I wanted to mention a couple of things about the subject if you got it in.
Sure.
First of all, both sides with dialogue, whether conservative or liberal, things are well overstated. Because I remember people saying when President Obama was elected, the country was going to be destroyed, and there were going to be people that our whole system was going to be in an upheaval, and our country wasn't going to survive. And that didn't happen.
Right.
Also,
and at times, and I've said this on the air before, at times, I will admit to being guilty to being one of those people.
Mm-hmm.
There were times where I got upset about something in particular that happened that was, in my mind, still a legitimate concern. But I probably went too far in saying what I did. And so I'm asking those of us out there that are listening, learn from the mistakes of the past on that. Because at times I was thoroughly convinced that the country was going to end because of President Barack Obama. I still have legitimate concerns about what he did. He still took us way too far in the wrong direction. But at the same time, I should have had a little perspective and foresight when it came to that. So please continue.
Well, and the liberal side, of course, does the same thing. I've heard rhetoric from the Progress Network that said that the country is going to be destroyed by Donald Trump, that he's going to take away your children, and the people are going to die, and it's going to be just complete chaos, and our country is going to end as we know it. And when it goes into the mind of someone like this shooter, then that's what will encourage somebody like that. I'm not blaming the rhetoric, but I am saying that there needs to be some degree of responsibility taken when you consider that you've made statements like that. And I do remember President Obama chastising conservative radio, talk radio.
Oh, yes, by name.
Evil things.
And Fox.
You won't see that. You won't see that in this situation. You will not see the liberal leaders in any way trying to govern, chastise, trying to reel in any of the dialogue that's been given, because it won't be done. They will never take responsibility for what is said when it's to their disadvantage.
Well, can you see, for example, one of the major news organizations blaming, oh, say, Chris Matthews or Rachel Maddow or Al Sharpton or any of the people on the left for this shooting?
No, that will not happen.
Because there were people blaming Bill O'Reilly and Glenn Beck and Rush Limbaugh when Gabby Giffords was shot before we knew that the guy was a Democrat. So, and weirdly enough, we even had people repeating that story even 6 years after that's been debunked. But the point in all that is, you're right, there is a obvious double standard when it comes to the media.
And one thing, too, on the conservative side, because you have a promo with Rush, and it said, and it's been played over and over again about Gorbachev destroying, Barack Obama is destroying the American economy. Now we're going to get advice from someone that destroyed his own economy. Now, Barack Obama didn't do things right, and certainly the economy was sluggish at best.
Oh, it's the slowest recovery in American history.
But it wasn't destroyed. Destroyed means it is no longer functional, but it's completely different. And that's what I'm talking about the idea of using words in the right way. A lot of it sounds like an eighth-grade girl when they dramatize everything.
Yeah, and that's
attention. There's too much of that.
And I don't know if you got this from me. Of course, for those of you who don't know, John from Millbrook is my father. I don't know if you got this from me or this is just something that our brains happen to be on the same wavelength. I have often related progressives in general to a teenage girl, because every problem that they have is the biggest problem that has ever happened. That the world has never seen a problem like this. And so there is a little bit of that over dramatization that does occur with the left, that they make every little thing. I mean, I was going to talk, and I will get to this in a second, about a bill that takes off a $200 tax on silencers. Their reaction to this is that there's going to be people with silencers everywhere, people just dying, and nobody will be caught because they won't be able to hear the bullets.
One thing, there's no such thing as a complete silencer anyway.
Right, and we're going to get into that, but you're right. I mean, it doesn't make it a pea shooter. It still makes a lot of noise.
Yeah, it does. Well, I'll let someone else get on and enjoy it. Take
All
care.
Right. Yeah, thank you so much for that. Appreciate that. John from Millbrook, everybody.
That's funny. I was reading a book fiction,
right,
about in this one of the character, not really the main character, but somebody in the book was making money under the table, making illegal silencers or muffler, whatever, that's some other name.
Well, technically, suppressor is the correct
term. That's it. That's
yeah.
It. That's it. That's what he was making.
Mm.
And I kind of had that same thought, that's sort of a misnomer, a silencer. Like, nope, you probably hear those things.
Oh, yeah.
I'm sure you've had, knowing you, I'm sure you know a lot more than I do. But.
Well, here's the thing, and I'm going to bring this up because we'll just go ahead and go into it now. The Hearing Protection Act is what we're talking about here. And what the Hearing Protection Act does is it essentially gets rid of the registry. So we have a big database in Washington of all the people that have silencers. That's going to go away if the Hearing Protection Act comes out. And the reason it's called the Hearing Protection Act is because the primary use of a silencer, like Joe was just pointing out, it's actually called a suppressor because it doesn't silence the gun. It makes it less loud. So, first of all, it gets rid of that registry for people that happen to own suppressors. It also would get rid of the $200 tax for purchasing one, and you wouldn't need to get with the government every single time you sell one of your suppressors. So, in other words, the transfer is no longer illegal if you don't register it with the government. Now, it's been in limbo for about 5 months now. We thought that with Donald Trump that was supposed to be something that was very high on the agenda. Turns out it hasn't really moved forward, but it got new life just a couple weeks ago when the House said that they would try to – they're going to have a hearing on a different bill called the Sportsman Heritage and Recreational Enhancement Act, and it's going to be worked into a part of that bill. Now, I'll say this right from the start so you know where I'm coming from on this. I don't own a suppressor. I don't really want to own a suppressor, to be perfectly honest. I have no need of it. I have hearing protection. That's much cheaper. I'd rather just wear my hearing protection when I shoot, so it doesn't bother me. It doesn't throw my balance off, so I really don't need a suppressor. Don't really want one, to be perfectly honest. However, I don't think that it's right to keep people who do want one from having one and putting all these stipulations on it. Apparently, Donald Trump Jr. was a big fan of this bill, and that's one of the reasons that he was pushing it. And it would repeal those restrictions on suppressors by the ATF. So no taxes on it, no records, and the extended background check, which, by the way, that extended background check is absolutely ridiculous because every person that owns a firearm has to go through a background check. That's the law of the land. But with suppressors, you have to undergo an extended background check. Sometimes it can take up to 10 months to get your clearance.
Mm, didn't know that.
Right. With the background check for the gun, it's usually done within an hour. And so the idea that, think about this now, think about the logic. You can buy the actual firearm in a day. It takes 10 months to get the suppressor, which is just an accessory for the firearm.
Well, maybe you should buy your suppressor, wait 10 months, and buy the gun.
Well, maybe so. That might be the easier solution. But my point in all of that is the gun's the thing that you can actually use to kill someone. The worst thing that you could do with a suppressor is whop someone on the head with it. Mm. So it doesn't really make... That would be like, we're going to ID you and do an extended background check for the tap, for the beer keg, but we'll just give you the beer without IDing you. That doesn't make any sense.
Close.
Yeah, but anyway. All right, so just a thought. But we'll be back. We'll talk a little bit more about this. 860-1440 are the numbers if you want to weigh in.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
The best friend to American liberty who is the most sincere and active in promoting true and undefiled religion and who sets himself with the greatest firmness to bear down profanity and immorality of every kind. John Witherspoon, signer of the Declaration of Independence.
Hey, welcome back, gang. Glad to be with you on this Friday morning, back on the Patriot Preacher. By the way, did want to mention this. We do have the Decades Rewind. Those tickets are available, so anybody that has called in, if you want to have your name in the hat, all you have to do is give my producer a call right now, 860-1440. Give him your information. We'll put your name in the hat for the Decades Rewind tickets. If you want to get those and call in now, you can do that as well. So anybody that has called in is eligible. If you want to give Joe your information, you can. Also did want to mention this. The Montgomery Zoo and Mann Wildlife Learning Museum is offering free admission for all dads on Father's Day, Sunday, June 18th. So create lasting memories with your dad. Enjoy some quality time during a fun-filled trip to the zoo. The Montgomery Zoo is home to over 500 species of animals featured in five continental realms. So don't miss out on some of the zoo's newest residents, including a baby ring-tailed lemur, a juvenile giraffe, and cheetahs. The Montgomery Zoo and Mann Wildlife Museum is open daily from 9 to 5:30, with the last ticket being sold at 4 p.m.
Unless you're a dad, free. I've got
just this Sunday, but yes.
I've got to take advantage of that. I've got to see this juvenile giraffe.
Right. He's probably, you know, wearing real grungy clothing and thinks life sucks. And that's.
Yeah. And I want to go on the, I've never been on the, oh, what's it called?
Skylift.
The Skylift.
Yeah.
Skylift.
See, I've never been either. I need to go out and do that. But yeah, this Sunday only, free admission to all dads who want to get into the zoo. Now, getting back to what we were talking about, the matter at hand, when it comes to the Hearing Protection Act, which, by the way, now has been worked into the Sportsman's Heritage and Recreational Enhancement Act, and for those of you who have already forgotten that, it's okay, I have too. So... you know, long name, but essentially it deals with land rights and hunters' ability to go on to federal lands. They worked this into it because it's sort of connected. I don't have a problem with it standing on its own, but when they put it in there, the left accused the right of trying to sneak it in. I don't see how in this modern age how you could really sneak anything into legislation as long as you have adequate time before you vote on it for people to read it. But regardless, they lost their freaking minds when it happened to be scheduled for that hearing on the anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting, which when you know how scheduling works, this is how disingenuous the left can be. When you know how scheduling works in Congress, they don't necessarily set the dates long in advance. And they certainly aren't checking the anniversaries of shootings to try to make them coincide with the way that the bills are going to come up for hearings in the House. So this was a big deal about nothing. Mike, which is a very left-leaning news site, my favorite thing was their claim that on the anniversary of the Pulse nightclub shooting, the Republicans are having a hearing for a bill that would make firearms even deadlier. Yeah, here's the thing about silencers. If you get shot with a gun, it doesn't matter whether there's a silencer on it or not. It's going to hurt exactly the same amount. It's going to be exactly the same amount of danger to your life, depending on where you got shot, whether the gun had a suppressor on it or not.
There's another little piece of ingenuity that I'm wondering if you know about, this three-shot thing where you attach it to a rifle and it fires three shots.
Oh, the three-round burst. Yes, I'm aware of it.
Yeah.
But anyway.
Is that legal?
Yes, a three-round burst is legal because it's still not fully automatic.
Oh, okay.
Fully automatic means you hold down the trigger and it's continuous fire. So that's the only kind of firearm that's illegal, really. But anyway, when it comes to the Hearing Protection Act and everything, they made this big deal out of it. But the bullet is going to travel at exactly the same speed. It's going to have exactly the same amount of impact on you, depending, of course, on where it hits, as it would if it had a silencer on it. So it doesn't make the gun deadlier. See, that's one of the things that is problematic with the left's whole worldview on what should and should not be illegal when it comes to guns, is that 9 times out of 10, the things that they're worried about are cosmetic. For example, there are several models of gun, same bullet, same speed, but this is typically in the more liberal states. For example, in California, depending on how many accessories it has on it, that's what determines whether or not the gun is legal or illegal. And what they're talking about with that is a scope, a flash suppressor, the pistol stock. Well, I got to tell you something. If you get shot, you're not worried about whether or not the gun that shot you had a pistol stock or a more traditional stock. You're not worried about whether it had wood or it was a black finish. That does not make a difference when you're hit with the bullet. And if it's the same bullet, it fires at the same speed and hits you in the same way. Now, you can change the bullet and make it a little deadlier. A hollow point's going to do more damage than a full metal jacket. Well, actually, that depends on where you get shot as well. But anyway, my point in all of this is the left is claiming that it makes guns deadlier. It does not make guns deadlier. And when it comes to silencers, first of all, I don't like the tax on it anyway, but that shouldn't surprise anybody. I tend to not like any taxes. So this is the government trying to manipulate us into certain behaviors. It's kind of the same as a sin tax. You know, they put really high taxes on things like tobacco and cigarettes. So that's a sin tax. They're trying to discourage you from a certain behavior. They do the same thing with sugar. You're not allowed to have
alcohol, too.
Yeah, alcohol's the same way.
In fact, in Philadelphia, they have what they call a sweet tax. If you get a drink.
Right, that's a recent development. If you buy sugary drinks and they're over a certain volume, I guess would be the way to say that. If they're over a certain volume, they tax that. So they're trying to manipulate people into certain behaviors they deem appropriate by coercing you through taxes. These are wrong because it only targets certain groups of people. Obviously, a silencer tax only targets people who are gun enthusiasts that want to protect their hearing. So it grants, and here's the other thing. Just make it illegal or illegal. If it's a bad behavior, make it illegal. If it's something that actually hurts other people, make it illegal. But don't try to manipulate our behavior by making certain things legal but also taxing them more heavily than others. Just make up your mind on that. But here's my point on the whole silencer thing. The truth is criminals don't use suppressors. They don't use suppressors. It's not a common thing for a criminal to use a suppressor on their firearms. Now they use firearms, but they don't use suppressors. Because, again, like we stated before, it doesn't work like it does in Mission Impossible or any of those movies where you fire the gun, it makes a little sound, and that's it. It's still a very loud bang. And anybody within the general vicinity is going to be able to hear it. It's not a stealth weapon. So does it make it quieter? Yes, but does it make it quiet enough to where it's like in some of these TV shows where you can murder someone in your office and your secretary won't be able to hear it? No. It's still a very loud bang. They've gotten better, and they are quieter than they used to be, but it doesn't make it silent. Furthermore, it makes a gun much harder to conceal. One of the reasons that I would never want a silencer is because if I did put a suppressor on my firearm, it would no longer fit into my holster because it usually doubles the length of the gun, and it would be almost impossible to actually carry it concealed around. And most traditional holsters won't even fit a gun that has a suppressor. So it makes a gun harder to carry around in a concealed fashion. And criminals would never do that because if there's a gun plainly on their hip or in sight, even though they have it under their clothes, the chances of them getting arrested before they even commit the crime are much higher. So, because a lot of times, if you're in that situation, you're not supposed to have a gun, and most of those people don't have concealed carry licenses. So the odds of that actually having an effect, there's no way that criminals are going to start carrying suppressors. I mean, I'm not saying that it would never, ever happen, but the odds of that taking place, it's just not likely because of that. And on top of that, because it still makes a noise, it grants you absolutely no combat advantage when it comes to a handgun. Now, it's helpful if you're a sniper in a war zone, because then they're far enough away from you when you shoot somebody that your position is not given away. They're very helpful in that. But unless you're a high-dollar assassin, like, I don't know, Deadshot from the comic books, having a suppressor doesn't really help you. If you're a street thug that's fighting other gang members or mugging people or murdering people, a suppressor actually makes your job much harder. And so there's no combat advantage when you're talking about gun combat to having that. In fact, and maybe one of the military guys can call me in and correct me if this is untrue, but I've never seen a military pistol equipped with a suppressor because it doesn't grant them any combat advantage. If you're close enough to hit somebody with a handgun, they're going to hear it anyway, regardless of whether you have a suppressor on or not. So it doesn't grant you any combat advantage. Criminals aren't using things, using these things at all. This is really only for hearing protection. And like the guns themselves, if the criminals wanted to use suppressors, they would get suppressors. But they don't. It's virtually unheard of for a murder or a mugging to take place where the criminal had a suppressor on their firearm. So, my final point on this is, the restrictions on suppressors, they make nobody safer, and they cast an undue burden in the name of getting money for the state and controlling people. That's all it really does. So, I'm 100% in favor of the Hearing Protection Act, whatever form it may take. It's time for us to get rid of these outdated regulations, because they don't make us safer. Star Spangled Sermon is next.
This is a News Radio 1440 podcast.
Philippians 1:21. For to me, to live is Christ, and to die is gain.
Hey everyone, welcome back to the Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and the News Radio 1440 app. 860-1440 are the numbers, but it's time for us to wind down the shows for this week with our last Star Spangled Sermon. Considering our subject matter, and I do want to say this before I start, because I thought about doing a Father's Day Star Spangled Sermon, and normally I would do something of that effect, but honestly, with the story that broke this week, I think it's more appropriate to talk on something else. Let's keep our fathers in mind, because of course God is our ultimate father, so in a sense, any insight into his personality would be a Father's Day Star Spangled Sermon, but nonetheless, this is Paul instructing younger Christians how to teach each other. When it comes to, and when I say young Christians, I mean new Christians, because of course Christianity was not that old when he wrote this letter. This is one of his earlier epistles. Paul is instructing these Christians how to treat one another, especially when disagreements arise amongst them. This happens in Ephesians 4:26 through 27. Paul says, "Be angry, and yet do not sin. Do not let the sun go down on your anger, and do not give the devil an opportunity." Paul says that being angry, interestingly enough, is not a sin. Sometimes we think about that being mad is something to, as a Christian, be ashamed of, that we should stay away from it. But Paul here is saying, be angry. Just don't sin as a result of it. So what we can take away from that is that being angry is not a sin, but doing something that would be sinful as a result of that anger is, of course, not justified just because you're mad. And he also says, don't let the sun go down on your anger, which the takeaway from that with me is, it's okay to be angry. It's not okay to hold on to it. It's not okay, because once that happens, you start festering it. It starts becoming ingrained in you, even though it's a bigger response than whatever action it was that upset you elicited. And at that point, you're holding on to a grudge. And while it's not a sin to be angry, it is a sin to hold on to a grudge. So when he says, do not sin while we are angry, means that it's essentially all right for us to be upset about something. In fact, there's some things that even Jesus got mad when he saw the way people were behaving in the temple. Even God gets angry. He got angry with the Israelites quite often, and yet did not sin. So I think what Paul is really saying here is, it's okay to be angry, but when we are angry, we have to be aware of the fact that we are more susceptible to suggestion at that point. That there are things that we can do that when we were angry that we would not do normally when we're under the influence of anger. So while it's not necessarily bad to be angry, in fact, sometimes our anger is justified. Don't let that be an excuse to do something else we know we shouldn't be doing. If we're to follow Paul's recommendation here, I would say the best way to paraphrase it would be, well, blow off some steam, but then let it go. If you're going to blow up, blow up. Still be cautious of your actions, but blow up, and then let that be the end of it. And here's the thing. I know that with everything that we've been talking about, with the double standards in the media, people being upset about the shooting, who are somehow even blaming people that have nothing to do with the shooting. That's something our enemies have done in the past and will probably continue to do again. Our enemies are not going to play fair, nor are they going to treat us the way that we want to be treated. And it's okay to be angry about that. It's okay to see the reaction and know that what they're doing isn't fair, it's not right. And it's okay to point that out and to be upset about it. In fact, I think that would be justified anger. But the truth is, we have a higher calling. Jesus, in his Sermon on the Mount, told us that we're supposed to pray for our enemies and love those that hate us. And so even if we're angry with them, we have to treat that as though we were angry at a family member or angry at a friend. That we're upset, but we still treat them the way that we would want to be treated. We still treat them with love and respect, even when we're angry. There's a great quote from Batman Begins, the first Chris Nolan movie in the Batman trilogy. Batman is being trained by Ra's al Ghul, who, spoiler alert for a movie that's like 12 years old now, winds up being the primary antagonist of the film. And this is right before he's even Batman. And the final test is he has to execute a criminal that has been captured by the League of Shadows. And he says, "I will bring him to justice, but I will not be his executioner." And Ra's al Ghul is upset by the fact that he won't take it to that next extreme, hands him a sword, and he says, "Mercy is a courtesy your enemies will not afford to you." And Bruce Wayne responds with, "And that's what makes it so important." The fact that they're not going to show us mercy, the fact that they're not going to play fair means somebody has to. So yeah, there's going to be people out there in our lives that refuse to play fair, that don't give us the benefit of the doubt, that are out there just to essentially attack us. And they're not going to show us any mercy. And that's why it's so important that we have to. That we're the merciful people that Jesus called us to be. That's what separates us from them. That perspective, that understanding of the truth, that's what gives us an advantage that they don't have. And that's why it's important that we show it, because if we don't, nobody's going to. If we're not the one that's willing to turn the other cheek, they're not going to do it. And then things just get ratcheted up over and over again until there's nothing left. Somebody's got to be willing to take a stand and say, "No, I'm not going to attack them that way." How are we going to do something like that? Because that's not easy to do. Well, I think the only way to do so is to remember that God is a just God, and he was justified in his anger towards us when we sinned. While we were his enemies, he still sent his son to die for us. God may be justified in his anger towards us, but he's still slow to wrath and quick to forgive. So why don't we follow his example and try to do that ourselves? Stay the course, friends.
The Patriot Preacher on News Radio 1440 and NewsRadio1440.com.